we left off yesterday, trying to show the different opinions about whether there's chalipin for a goy or not. So we seem to be that most of the opinion point in the direction that kinyan chalipin is a good kinyan. Ben Atam for Shuel that way, Rabbi Sharm said that way. The Shach was the biggest opponent of a kinyan chalipin for a goy. We try to give a little bit of lumdus back and forth why it should or should not work. So we said that the two major examples that the Rishonim and later the Acharonim dealt with in terms of Kinyan Chalipin was vis-a-vis Mechiras Bechor and vis-a-vis Mechiras Chametz. In the days of the Rishonim, they used to talk a lot about Mechiras Bechor. In the days of the Acharonim, they started to talk more about Mechiras Chametz. So for two reasons. First of all, less and less people had animals, and more people had a lot of schnapps. So the issues of Mechiras Chametz became much more prevalent in the later days. So it's the same shah, it's the same exact issue, whether Chalipin works or doesn't work. So in the later generations, namely in the last 6 months, so we have more and more shaylos have come up in terms of kinyan chalipin vis-a-vis goyim. So just share with you one or two unique stories that I had before we move back to our sugya. So I had a shayla concerning a kinyan chalipin concerning the mitzvah tefilas kalim. What does kinyan chalipin have to do with tefilas kalim? So we know the Mishnah tells us at the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, when you buy kalim from a goy, even if the kalim were never used, so they're totally kosher, but there's a mitzvah to be tovel them in the mikvah. The shayla of the Rishonim is that the rice and the rabbanim, but the said that's the halacha, and you're not supposed to use them until you tovel them. So there is a big machlokes haposkim about if you have a type of a kli that if you would tovel this kli would get ruined, it would get destroyed. So do you have to tovel it and have it break and then throw it to the garbage? To us, what do I say? No, that it's inconceivable that the halacha would require of you to tovel something if toveling it goof is going to break the kli. So that's the machlokes. Some poskim of today said, a tough luck. There's an issa to use a kli before it's but finished. It's going to break, so don't use it. So don't buy such a kli. Finished. Can't use such a kli. And other boss can say no. That the whole issa of using kalim before with the toivel emanates from the mitzvah's tefillah. So there's an issa to use a kli. There's a mitzvah to toivel a kli. The mela, since I have to toivel it, for me to use it without toiveling it is not an option. But imtum tzeloyma that I don't have the option to toivel it, it's not a mitzvah for me. I can't toivel it. So it's inconceivable that there should be a mitzvah to do something that I can't do. So once the mitzvah doesn't apply, then the issa doesn't apply as well. It's like Moshe Mandav Adoyma, there's a Mordechai in Maseches Menachos that writes that let's say a person on Shabbos puts on a beged of four corners without strings on. So the Mordechai writes, that's not a bitul mitzvah of tzitzis. Why? It's not an issa to wear a four-cornered garment. There's a mitzvah, if and when you have a four-cornered garment, to put strings on. So if I can't fulfill the mitzvah because of Shabbos, so I'm not allowed to make strings on the beged on Shabbos. So kol's man that I can't do the mitzvah, in the male there's no issa to wear the beged. Well, the other marshal the Mordechai gives is, let's say a person lives in a house without a mezuzah. So on Tuesday, if he's living in a house without a mezuzah, so that's called a bitul mitzvah of mezuzah. Let's say he lives in a house on Shabbos without a mezuzah. So he says, that's not a bitul mitzvah because you can't write a mezuzah, you can't nail on a mezuzah on Shabbos. So obviously the mitzvah doesn't apply. So since the mitzvah doesn't apply, the male of the issa doesn't apply either. So that's the same as some poskim write for tefillas kalim. There's no independent issa to use a kli without tefillah. The using a kli without tefillah is a bitul of the mitzvah of tefillah. So in a situation where I can't toivel it, So others say no. Others say, you're not allowed to use the kli. It's going to break. So either break your kli or don't use the kli. You can't use the kli no matter what. So that's a shayla. So when people ask me the shayla, very common these types of shaylas come up. So, you know, I always tell people to do the following eitzah. He said, as an added precaution, maybe what you should do is if you have a type of a kli that you really think is going to break, if it's toivel, not saying it will or won't, but let's say, Louis, so you have a kli that you really convinced is going to break if it's toivel. So instead of just relying outright on the mekila, why don't you have a little sniff the hakel? Give the kli to a goy as a gift. That sounds like the opposite. Tefillas kalim is getting away from the goy. No, so the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that if you have a kli that was made by a goy, owned by a goy, that now belongs to a Jew, it's chayv in tefillas kalim. If it was one time owned by a goy and it's still owned by a goy, then there's no mitzvah tefillas kalim. I'm borrowing the kli from the goy. It's the goy. The goy doesn't have a mitzvah tefillas kalim. The mitzvah only kicks in once the kli is yotze b'shus ha'achal l'yishus ha'ishol. Let's have a fairish Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah. So some folks can suggest that if you have a kli that you can't toivel, so what should you do? Give it to a goy as a gift. And now the kli belongs to the guy, and ask him to please buffer it. I'm buying it. It's his kli, so it's not a chayv and tefillah altogether. So in Shulchan Aruch, it says you're not supposed to do that under normal circumstances. That's not a good idea. I'll get out of the home mitzvah tefillas kalim. Every time, instead of doing tefillas kalim, I'll give all my kalim to a guy as a gift, and I'll buy him back. You're not supposed to do that. Who remembers when we learned Masechah Shabbos? Who was with us for Shabbos? Who was around? Oh, so what have we learned about this, right? So the Mordechai is not the right in Maseches Beitza that if you're stuck on Friday afternoon and you realize that you can't tovel your kalim and you're not allowed to tovel your kalim on Shabbos according to many opinions, so So the Mordechai gives the states and he says, you know what, give it to a goy and borrow it back from the goy. After Shabbos, then you take it back and you entitle it. So this idea exists in between the lines that sometimes almost as a backup for Tefillas Kelim, there's no shift selling it to a goy. So what I like to tell people to do is, if they have a kli that anyway they're not going to tovel because it's mamish, it's going to break, so they should give it to a goy as a gift and then they should borrow it back from the goy. And sure, and they can rely on that. But see of the fact that mikra din, it's not really chayv because it's not yours. And but see of the fact that it's probably not chayv anyway because it's going to break. So it's see of those two things that engage machum hovel. This is very common with what they call the coffee things, the carrot. What do they call them? Carrot. Yeah. So that's a shayla. Whether if you can tovel that, if you can tovel that. The whole thing is a computer inside. The whole thing is going to self destruct if you tovel that. So many poskim say, many poskim talk hold it's potter from tefillah, and some poskim say no. Some poskim say it's chayv in tefillah, and it's going to break, so don't use it. So this aids, as I usually tell people to do, I tell them they should give it to the goy and shut. So somebody asked me the shayla, if they have a kli, this type of a kli, and they want to give it to the goy, but there's no goy around. The goy, well, the goy is in the office, where they can schlep this kli with them to the office, the whole thing is a mess. So is it possible to sell something, is it possible to give something as a matana to a goy without actually handing it off to him? So what does this depend upon? How do you sell things to goyim? Who? Rashi, Taisus, Rav, Shlokesh, this stuff really comes alive. So I said, you know, we try to do, usually when I, like, let's say, when I had to give my coffee machine, so I gave it to a goy. So the goy came to the house, and I handed it to him. I gave him mamash as a matana. Like Taisa says, matana for sure, mashicha works. I gave it to mamash as a matana. It's yours, 100% yours. And then I gave it back. He knew what to do. He had the lines rehearsed of it. I told him beforehand. So then he handed it back to me. He says, I'm letting it back to you for the next 100 years. I said, good. We should all live and be well for 100 years. Good. So if it's still, if we're still all around 100 years, we'll try to get a new one. Okay. So. But if the guy's here and the coffee machine's here, so how are you going to pull that off? So you can give kesef. Kesef, according to many Rishonim, most Rishonim, probably doesn't even work. So how are you going to do it? So what other great kinyan is available for you? Make a kinyan chalipin. So make a kinyan chalipin with the guy. I kinyan chalipin, the shach said it doesn't work. True, but Rabbeinu Tam Hutkizok, it does work. The Chacham Shlomo says it does work. Rav Rom says it does work. Most of the poskim said it does work. So maybe a Betziruf, the coffee machine, and the Rabbeinu Tam, so you can get time to get it with the coffee machine, maybe Yesh Mokhav Mokhav. So that was the easy case. That was the simple case. But then it got even more labidic that. Shtar doesn't work in Metaltalin. Shtar never works in Metaltalin. And Shtar and Karka, Rabbeinu Tam claims doesn't work for a guy. That's also in the Chalikis Mishnah. So I had one crazier case. So far we went from selling B'chor B'hemet Ha'ira to selling Chomets to selling Karak machines. Now we got the wildest. We did a Kinyan Chalipin on a dog once. I'll tell you why. We're doing a dog for the following reason. There's a very serious problem. It's an Issa Min HaTorah to be Misares in any Bal Chai. You're not allowed to cause, you're not allowed to physically cause in any animal to no longer be able to have children. That's an Issur Midaraisa, but Eretz Chem Lo Sa'asuv, that applies even if it's not. Eretz Chem Lo Sa'asuv doesn't mean Eretz Yisrael, it means throughout the world. The Gemara Tarshim Rapeh explains to us that there's an Issur Midaraisa to be Misaris any Bal Chai, including a dog. So this is a big problem. The person owns a dog, so it's a big problem because nobody wants to have dogs running around that are not Misuras for technical reasons. So the standard practice is they usually do Siras on, usually they have a procedure they do. In terms of neutering the dog, that's like standard practice today. So Hashem, how are you going to do that? I'll be Allah, you know, I'll do that. So one would think, oh, no problem, I'll give it to a goy to do. What's the big deal, right? So the Gemara says, yeah, I'll do that. The Gemara says, Beferish and Bermetzia, now I'll let it do Siros, even Ide Akom. Why not? What's the problem? So the Gemara says, for sure it's also, not even a shadow there, it's also. But the Gemara is not sure why it's also. So one day the Gemara says, it's also because of Amir Yachom, that the same way now that you ask a goy to turn on a light for you on Shabbos. So the din of Amir Yachom applies outside of Shabbos also. That's one opinion in the Gemara. And the other opinion says, no, Amir Yachom only applies in Shabbos. So why are you not allowed to ask a goy to do Sirus? Preferably you're not allowed to ask a goy to do Sirus. So the Gemara says, the other explanation for that din is that there's one Tana that holds that goyim also mitzuvah la Sirus. That the Yisuf Sirus is like the eighth mitzvah b'nei noch. It's not from the Shem mitzvah b'nei noch, it's the eighth one. It's the one that we don't know about. So it's a machlekes atanoim. The reason why you probably don't know about it, because we probably don't hold it that day. We probably hold it the other day. But according to one Tana, goyim mitzvah al Sirus. So if I ask a goy to do Sirus, that would be an Issa Derais of Lifnei Iver. So that's a machlekes in the Gemara. Why is it that we're not allowed to give a goy to be Misaris HaBehemus? Everyone agrees you're not allowed. It's not even a shayla you're not allowed to. It's just a shadow. Why it's also? Is it also midrabbanan to merely Yaakov, or is it also midatara to the iver of Sirius for the goy? So the poskim, earlier poskim, write that is there any way whatsoever to get around this problem? So maybe you can argue as follows. Maybe if the yisr is only out a mil yachum, it's only a derabbanan of a mil yachum. A mil yachum means that I'm not only ask you to do malacha for me. What about for me to tell you to do malacha for yourself? Let's say if I say to a guy, it's dark in that room, and don't you want to read? Go in the room and read. I'm not asking you to turn the light for me. I'm telling you, go turn the light for you. So according to many, that's not called the mil yachum. So some suggest that maybe that would be true by Sivrus also. That if I own the dog, and I ask the guy to go to the vet, and I say, please, be Masaris the dog for me, that's a problem. That's the mil yachum. What if the guy owns the dog? So if the guy owns the dog, and I say to the guy, listen, it's your dog. I'm not shaykh to this dog. It's your dog. I'll give you a good idea. You know, it's probably a good idea. As it says in the puppy magazines, it's a good idea to be Masaris your dogs. So let me tell you, why don't you go to the vet and go get this dog Masaris for yourself? So that may be okay. So that's what some place in Europe already had such a chiddush years ago, that maybe if you machta the dog to the guy, if the dog doesn't belong to you, belongs to the guy, then you say to the guy, oh, by the way, maybe it's not such a bad idea to go get it Masuras. You know, I go get it to Masuras, please. So maybe that's going to work. So you have to find a nice guy who knows you. So he's the same guy you say chametz to, and he's the guy you sell your mechor to, he's the guy you sell your coffee maker to. So he knows already how that you're a little off. So you say to him, I got another thing today. I want to sell you my dog today. I'm going to give you my dog. It's yours 100% mine. Hamza, your dog. And show it. And the guy says, do you ever want it back? I said, you know, I mean, maybe if you want to sell back to me in a week from now, we'll talk about it. We'll discuss it. I don't know. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. See, on vacation, maybe I don't like dogs anymore. We'll talk about it. But by the way, the next couple of days, it may be worth your while to go to the vet down around the corner and get it done. So many folks can say this is a big joke. This is a sham. This shouldn't really be doing these kinds of things. So it's probably better not to do these kinds of things. Probably better not to have a dog if you have to rely on these things. But for those who have dogs anyway, and they're coming saying, listen, Rabbi, we're not getting rid of the dog. We like the dog. We're not getting rid of the dog. We just give us the best way to do it. So this is not a great eitzah, but at least according to some opinions, maybe this would work. So this is what many people do b'zman hazeh. They do a mechiras dog before they go to the vet. So how do you do a mechiras dog? So again, very simple steps, right? If you want to do a mechira, say kesef and meshicha, so he gives you a couple of pennies for the dog, sapruta, how much does the dog worth? Pruta, he gives you a pruta, and you say, harei at whatever, and so he gives you a pruta for the dog, and dog shali mochalach, and shoyin, and then you make a kinyan meshicha on it, and shalom Yisrael. So the guy owns the dog, l'chaladeus. What if, you know, he doesn't want to pay, you want to give him a matana? Okay, so matana, we assume meshicha probably works in fun, right? What if the dog's not here? What are you going to do? The dog's there. Where is the dog? Who sold the dog? So my shekachoy, a guy called me up a few weeks ago. A guy calls me up frantic that he had already sent the dog to the vet. It's already sitting by its schedule for the procedure tomorrow morning. And it's already already too late to go retrieve the dog. I think I told him, I think he said he could retrieve it, but if his wife was the one who would have to go retrieve it, and he said, if I tell him to tell her to go get the dog back from the vet to make a kinyan, you know what? She's going to send him to the vet. So anyway, it wasn't going over well for Shalom Bayis. So he explained to me that he has no choice. The dog is already sitting by the vet, and he wants to do a mechira dog to his, the clean lady, his babysitter or something, but the dog's not here. So how are you going to make a mechira on the dog if the dog's not here? So I said to him, we don't like to rely on this. We have to rely on Rabbeinu Tam. I said, if it's a fresh Rabbeinu Tam, can do Shinav Gimel. I said, Rabbeinu Tam, you can make a kinyan chalipin on the dog. So he said, so what do I do? So I said, so have the guy give you a little something or something. Because you have to go off the ground. And what is he going to give you? He's going to give you something. He'll give you a belt, he'll give you a watch, he'll give you a cell phone, he'll give you something. That'll be a mechiras kinyan chalipin. Do you need to aid him for kinyan chalipin? So he said, most Hashem said, huh? So if we're already relying on Rabbeinu Tam, we can run that part of Rabbeinu Tam also. Rabbeinu Tam says you don't need aid for chalipin. So that was the mechira of the dog that was done a few weeks ago. So we've progressed in our mechiras in terms of different ways of doing mechiras. But again, it's all predicated on Rabbeinu Tam. It's all part of the lumdis that we've been speaking about for the last couple of days. Okay, anyway, back to reality. So comes Rabbeinu Tam and says that not only am I a big believer in kinyan chalipin working for a guy, as I showed you from all the different Gemaras, Kiddush Dav Gimel, Kiddush Dav Ches, etc. And I did away with the Gemara in Bechoros, I explained that Gemara away. Rabbeinu Tam says, I'm going to put this into practice. This is very lemaisa, says Rabbeinu Tam, and it's very much lemaisa for me, says Rabbeinu Tam. Because Rabbeinu Tam, anyone know what he did for a living, Rabbeinu Tam? Maybe the money lender. He had to make a parnasa. He's not going to make too much money writing to him. wearing Rabbi Natan tefillin and keeping Shabbos late, it's not going to make money for you. So what? You had to make some parnas. You also had to make a couple of dollars. So Rabbi Natan was a money lender. Why did he get this illustrious position of a money lender? Because those were the only jobs that the Jews were allowed in the Middle Ages, because the goyim wouldn't let them own any land, so they couldn't plant anything. They weren't allowed to be in any of the crafts, so all the guilds were all closed to the Jews. What are you going to do? How much money? You're sitting cradled. Someone's got to support the cradle. How are you going to pay the taisim to sit right taisim? Someone's got to make some money. So the good news was that the goyim, during the Middle Ages, they were very, very religious. Or at least, whatever. They may believe they were religious. And they observed what it said in the Chumash. It says in the Chumash that u'le'achicha lo sashich, that you're not allowed to lend money in interest to your brother. So they read, they interpreted the Chumash as talking to them. So the Torah speaking to them and say, you are not allowed to lend your money in interest to your brother. So that meant one guy can't lend money to another guy of interest. But he needed to make money. But here John is asking Paul for a loan, and Paul said, I can't lend any money because it says in the Chumash, says in the Bible, not allowed to. So they had to come up with an eitzah. So they didn't figure out how to have to risk it. Nobody was smart enough in the ledge to fill out how to risk it. So they came up with I told this over, I think, last year. I was listening one day on the radio. I was driving in the car, and I know some guy was on some show, and thinking about this Gavaldic idea that one of the Islamic studies scholars came up with, how to get around the halachas, the laws of interest, because by the Muslims also, they don't lend money in theory to each other's interest. So they came up with a whole razzle-dazzle Gavaldic. The guy was so excited to explain to you that it's not really a loan, it's really an investment, and had the risk. I said, we came up with this 500 years ago. I said, this is like such a... They just opened up Bris Yehuda, they would get right out of the Hilchos Rivas. It's easy as anything. Okay. So anyway, so the Goyim came up with another Eitzah. So how did John lend Paul money in the Middle Ages? So he didn't lend Paul the money directly. He lent Rabbi Natan the money. And then Rabbi Natan would lend the money to Paul. So John would lend Paul the money, and then Rabbi Natan was the middleman. He would lend the money to Paul. What was the problem? The problem is that John would charge Rabbi Natan a lot of interest because John wanted to make money, but Rabbi Natan had to charge Paul how much interest? At least the amount plus what? Plus a lot more, because first of all, Rabbi Natan had to make a parnasa, and second of all, half the time, Paul would skip town. He'd run to another town. He'd run off and run a crusade somewhere. He'd never show up, and then Rabbi Natan was stuck with a loan to John. If he didn't play off John would kill him. So Rabbi Natan had to take that into consideration. You have to be smart, not just a matter of time, you have to be smart to make some money. So he has to figure out, he's got to raise the rates, all the interest rates, he's got to go skyrocketing, because otherwise he won't be able to cover himself through the insurance for the time when one of his debtors packs his bags. So that's how the Jews got involved in this wonderful business. You can just imagine that being involved in the Middle Ages as the money lender in between two hostile goyim was not the safest job around. And Rabbi Natan almost got killed because they tell over a story, and says over in the books a story about how Rabbi Natan, one of the goyim who had lent money to Rabbi Natan when he was the middleman, and the person didn't want to pay back the loan. So the easiest way in the Middle Ages not to pay back a loan is to do what? Just kill the guy. So the guy was Rabbi Natan. So they tried to kill Rabbi Natan. He was taken. They described the story. It was nice. Shoya took Rabbi Natan down to the river, and they're like throw him into the river. Mamash going to kill Rabbi Natan, and he was saved by apparently one of the goyim in town, one of the galachim or something. One of the goyim in town was a friend of Rabbi Natan. So he stepped forward to the plate and he bumped off the other guy and he saved Rabbi Natan's life. It was dangerous in the Middle Ages. It was tough. We think the Valley of Tyson, they were sitting around with their feet up, drinking a cup of coffee, and just riding Tyson all day. So they were running for their lives. They were scared. They were crusaders. They were crazy. They were Mishugoyim. All the knights in the shining armor, they were running and killing everybody, and Valley of Tyson was sitting and riding Tyson. Okay, good. So getting back to the story. So Rabbi Natan writes that every once in a while, somebody owed him money, and he wanted that money. But sometimes it would be a Jew who owed the money. Sometimes he was involved in a lot of different stuff. Once you're ready to lending money, so you have to get around the rivers problems. Okay, so he had a debt he had to collect from somebody, so he wanted to send a shaliach to collect that debt. So the Gemara says that's a big problem. For me to appoint a shaliach to collect the debt for me, that's a serious, serious problem in halacha. Why? Because the shaliach's going to go, I don't want to travel to, I live in France, I'm sitting and writing a Torah, he says, I don't want to bother now, somebody owes me money in Germany. So I'm going to appoint the shaliach to go collect the money. So the shaliach is going to travel to Germany, and then when the loave just presented and saying, okay, the Bein HaTam has a claim against you, what's the Lova going to say? What are the magic words? La Baal Barm Didiyat. He said, who are you? You're a nobody. I said, maybe you're telling the truth. Even if you want to, I don't have to deal with you. Let Rabbi Natan himself come in a horse and come to Germany and collect his debt. I'm not mechuyif to speak to you. So you don't say Shlom Shalom Kemaisa in the realm of Dini Mamanus. La Baal Barm Didiyat. So the Gemara says in Babakamet of Ayin that Chazal instituted a whole new procedure to get around this problem. What's this procedure called? It's called the Ksav Hasha'a. That if you write an official authorization, you write the Ksav, the modern day equivalent would be like a power of attorney. So I hereby appoint you to be my collection. You're the collection agency. You're going to go collect my chay for me. So if you walk in there with this shtar and say, I'm representing Rabbi Natan, here I am, that's a whole different ballgame. So the Gemara says that there's a big problem with this Ksav Hasha'a. How does it work? What's the mechanism of Ksav Hasha'a? How does it get around the fundamental problem? So you put it into writing. So the Gemara has a whole discussion in Bava Kamma about how exactly it works. So part of how it works is that when I want to collect this chol, say from Reuven, let's keep everybody Jewish now, if I want to collect this chol from Reuven, if I appoint Shimon to go collect the chol, so I'm makida the chol, or at least part of the chol, or something to Shimon. So Shimon is now coming to represent himself. Now, Shimon's probably going to get some money anyway, because here he's doing me a favor, he's traveling on horseback to Germany for a week, so I'm going to have to pay him something also. So when I say, I make a deal with this shliach, with this morsha, and I say, listen, you're going for me anyway, I'm going to give you part of this chayv. I'm going to give you half the chayv, a third of the chayv, a quarter of the chayv, whatever numbers I'm going to give you. So you're really collecting, in a sense, part of the chayv on behalf of yourself. So there's a certain type of a kinyan that's taking place, but the Gemara speaks about shutaf shavye, that I'm making you almost a shutaf in the collection itself. And because you're a shutaf, because you now own a shtikl, a chelek, something in that chayv, so now that gives you the right to be able to collect it, and the other person can't turn you away by saying la ba'al to the out. So again, that's a complicated sugya in Bava Kamma. Those were with us back in Ruba days, many, many moons ago, so we spent a lot of time in that Gemara. But that's part of the background of what's going on. So in order for this Hashah to kick in, there has to almost be a kinyan that's taking place. It means we have to be get the three people here. So we get the Reuven. Keep everybody Jewish for a minute. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. So Reuven's the Malve, Levi is the Loive, and Shimon is what we call the Morsha. He's the one who was appointed as the with the Shtar Hasha'a. So Reuven has to be makde a little bit of something to Shimon. He has to be makde the chov to Shimon. So how do you go about being makde that chov to Shimon? So that's a whole other story. How do you makde chov? That gets very complicated with the kinyan chalit, with the kinyan agav. That's a whole parsha in and of itself. So comes Tosfos and says that you have to be very, very careful. You have to be very, very careful when you do this procedure of Hasha'a if the person involved is going to be a goy. If Shimon's name is not going to be Shimon anymore, it's going to be John. So if John's going to go ahead and be the Morsha, so now we have a little bit of a problem. Why? Because we have to make sure that we're makne the chov to John properly. Because if we're not makne the chov properly to John, then when John's going to show up to Beis Din next month and try to collect the chov, it's not going to get anywhere. So we want to make sure that John was kona that chov appropriately. What's the big deal? John could be makne the chov. What's so terrible? What's the problem? So comes Rabbi Natan and says, the standard practice was, when you want to, let's say Reuven wants to be machna something to John, so John could give Reuven a what? He could give him a what? What's an easy way to be kona something? Is Rabbi Natan speaking? Kidichalib, right? That would be a good way of being kona something, right? It would be very easy. So John should give him a handkerchief. I'm going to watch him myself. I'll give him something. And it'll be kona the chalib. So there's another way to do it also. Instead of John doing it, somebody else could do it. Who else could do it? Somebody could represent John. Somebody could do it on behalf of John. Who is this somebody else who could do it on behalf of John? You're probably going to have Edom here, because you're going to have a shtar here. You're going to have Edom watching. This is all going to be notarized. So instead of John providing the kli for the kinyan chalipin, we could have two other people. We'll have Moshe and David, who are the Edom. They'll provide the kli for the kinyan chalipin. Or stop, bystander, a third guy is going to go ahead and provide the kli. What's the big deal? We do this all the time. When do we do this? When do we do this? All the time. Every chasna we do this. We stand right at the chosan's tish. So remember, we want to make the chosan mechayev himself to everything it says in the ksuba. So we want to make a kinyan on all the chiyuvim it says in the ksuba. We want to be subject to a kinyan, especially the tasefes and the dunya. Everything wants to be subject to hilchos kinyanim. So we go ahead and we do a kinyan chalipin. Who are we doing the kinyan chalipin from? From the chosan. Who are we doing the kinyan chalipin for? So why doesn't the kala come? If the kala wants to be kona from the chosan or the chiyuvim, so the correct thing to do is the kala should get off her chair, she should walk into the chosan's dish, and here I am, I'm ready to make the kinyan. That's what should happen. So we don't like, it's not so tzanua, we don't like to do that. She's busy, you know, accepting visitors at the time, she's giving out brachas, she's saying hello with everybody, so we don't want her to come and schlep, so what do? So the Masada Kedushin is a nice guy. What does he do? He pulls out a handkerchief out of his own pocket. He represents the Kala, and he says, I'm here by acquiring from you the Chosan. You're being Mechayiv yourself to all the Shibudim. I'm representing the Kala, and that's perfectly okay. No problem. We do it all the time. Maisa b'chol yoyim. We do it by the Badekin also. Not by the Tanaim also. But the Tanaim is a little bit of a fake, but we make believe we do it. That each side is Meshavi themselves to go through with the wedding. So I'm kind on behalf of the Chosan side, and I'm kind on behalf of the Kala side, and I provide the handkerchief. I give the key. I give the watch. I give the yarmulke. So I'm not getting married, but I'm representing everybody. That's perfectly okay. So this was standard procedure that Reuven would write a Shtar Shah. The Shtar Shah, John's going to take the Shtar Shah, go collect Levi. We want to make sure that Reuven is machted to John, and John's not doing the kinyan. Who's doing the kinyan? Moshe and David are doing the kinyan. So Tosfos gets very nervous about that. This is Rabbi Natan's view. Rabbi Natan was usually fine with this. Everything's great so far. Rabbi Natan gets very, very nervous. Why is up to Rabbi Natan on the bottom of the Tosfos? Three lines on the bottom. Chena Rabbi Natan, Chena Rabbi Natan, Shloch HaShav Yaravik Yechavim, Vayamakta Bechalipin. Umi Bazet Tzarech Lizoyer, Shaloi Lichto V'Kanina Minei, Dien Shlichus Azchil Yaravik Yechavim. So says Rabbi Natan, you have to be careful when you do this stunt, like you make a kinyan chalipin on behalf of John, don't write in the shtar that you're buying on behalf of the goy. Don't do that. Don't write that in the shtar. Because you write that in the shtar, that's going to be a red light. Why? Because you can't be a shaliach on behalf of a goy. You can't be zoich on behalf of a goy. You can't do that favor for a goy. So you can appoint the goy to the shtar hashoch, because he's more than just a shaliach, but you can't, as you as Aiden, if you want to make the kinyan on behalf of the goy, so you, Moshe and David, are representing John, you can't do that because ain zechiyah la'akum, ain shlichus la'akum, you can't do that. That's what Benetam says. So there is a very, very big problem with reading this thesis. What is the problem with reading this thesis? What's the problem with reading this thesis? A glaring problem. What did Benetam say? Look at Benetam again. Benetam said, don't write the following. Don't write that into the document. What's the problem with the Rabbeinu? Are you doing it or you're not doing it? Are Moshe and David making the kid in Chalipin on behalf of the goy or not? Did Rabbeinu say they can't? What did Rabbeinu say? He said, don't write it. Don't tell me when you're doing it. But are you doing it? Of course you're doing it. So Pili Plan, Rabbi Natan, doesn't make any sense. If Rabbi Natan holds that Moshe and David making a kid in Chalipin on behalf of John, they're trying to buy the chayv, you know, Reuben has a chov against Levi, and they're trying to get John to be zeicha on this chov. If you hold that that's a problem of ein zechir, ein shlichas l'goy, if you hold that that's a problem of ein shlichas l'yachom, so then you shouldn't be able to do this. You shouldn't be able to set this deal up. Rabbi Natan never said you can't do it. Rabbi Natan never threw Moshe and David out the window. Rabbi Natan just said, don't write it. Why did he say don't write it? He should say don't do it. So the Sma, in his comments in Chesha Mishpat, said, of course that's what Rabbi Natan meant. Everybody knows that's what Rabbi Natan meant. The Sma says it doesn't make any sense to read Rabbi Natan any other way. He says, how in the world could you read Rabbi Natan any other way? Of course Rabbi Natan meant is don't write it, which is a code wing, don't do it. Because it doesn't make any sense. Do it and don't write it. Well, no tell. No see, no tell. But it doesn't make any sense. So the Sma said, Rabbi Natan can't be read Kipshuta. So comes the Ketzois and says, it can't be read Kipshuta. It is read Kipshuta. It's right. Rabbi Natan said what he meant. Meant what he said. So what did Rabbi Natan mean? So Mamanav Shach, if it's a problem of Ein Shlichus L'Yakom, how can you do it in the first place? So comes the Ketzois and revamps the whole understanding of what's going on here. The ABC says Rebbe Tam. It says Ketzayis B'Das Rebbe Tam. Forget this Morsha. This is too complicated. John, Paul, too complicated. Let's stick to a Chasana. Okay. We're gonna have three people at the Chasana. Okay. We need a Chasana. Right, Chasana over here. Okay, this is the Chasana. Right. Okay, we have Chasan. We have a Kala. Where is she? She's wearing a very long dress. Okay? A little taller than the Chasan. Okay, sometimes happens. All right? And she's got a veil over her head. All right? She's sitting and accepting her guest. She's in the other room. Okay? It comes time to make a kinyan on this ksuba, right? So we come to the Chasan. Who comes to the Chasan? The Masada Kedusha. Okay, we're going to draw the rabbi. Okay? Make a rabbi. Hat. Some rabbis have beards, some don't. But I got, no. A little Amish, but I'll kind of basic picture, okay? So he's going to come to the chassid and say, listen, I'm going to hand you my cell phone, my kosher phone, okay? Only kosher phones can be used. I'm going to hand you my cell phone, and we're going to make a kiddush chalipin on behalf of this wonderful wonderful bride to be, okay? So that's good, right? Ma'isim b'cholyam, that's good. I want to ask you a lomdish question. I'm the rabbi, and I'm pulling my own cell phone out of my pocket and using that as the kli of chalipa. What halachic mechanism is that working through? I'm not marrying the chazan. She's marrying the chazan. He's not going to pay me the ksuba. He's going to pay her the ksuba. So how can I provide my phone, my kli, to make a kinyan for Yenim? What's the answer? Obviously. It must be some kind of a shlichu zechiyah type of halacha, right? It must be related to that shlichu zechiyah. That's what I would have said. But everyone agrees that's what you think the din is? It's you against the Ketzayis. Tabz Ketzayis says, no, that's not all what's happening. You missed the boat. This has nothing to do with Shlichus. It's nothing to do with Tzchiyah. It's based on a totally different parasha in the Torah. What parasha in the Torah is based on? Anyone have any ideas? Anyone told the Ketzayis? I put it on the Arab. What? There's a Gemara on the Zayin and Alpha Masechus Kedusha. Hopefully we're going to talk about the great detail if we get to the Zayin. At some point, we'll get there. But the Gemara says as follows. I want to be Mekadosh and Isha. And she wants to become a Kodesh. But I don't have any money. Mamish nothing. I'm broke. Okay, too many dates, I'm broke. I have nothing. Mamish nothing. Okay? Starting off in Kolo. First checks that come until next year. You have to run around finding a donor or something. We're in big trouble, all right? I can't buy a ring. Nothing. Some nice guy, he's standing under the chuppah, he feels bad for me. What does he do? So he comes up with some cash and he says to the cow, listen, Reuben wants to marry you. He really, really wants. He's the guy standing there with the suit and shuffling with the kittel, but he doesn't have any money. I'm going to put the money forward. And here's the money, and you become a kodesh to Reuben, and Reuben's good with that. Everyone's happy. Does it work or not? Does that work? So the Gemara says it works. How does it work? Based on what? Arv, who's the Arv? That's not the Arv. Arv is the other case. Arv is Taman Leplani. And she tells me to give money to somebody else. The Gemara says, Nav Zayin, Harez Mekadesh is within Ever Kanaini. What's Ever Kanaini? Ever Kanaini? Who's Ever Kanaini? Ever Kanaini can acquire himself back with Kesef. Remember? Who remembers? Bahavde Lon of Dasa, and Ever Kanaini is Mishtacher Bekesef. How is he Mishtacher Bekesef? Who's putting him forward the money? He doesn't own any money. It's a steer with him. She could have a cut a rabbi. So here the Evakadai is already, I'm ready to be Meshacher myself with Kesef. You don't own the Kesef. So obviously, if the Torah gave us a parasha of Haftil and of Dasa, licked in that parasha of Shiver Evakadai to Kesef, is the understanding that somebody else is coming forward with the money. Right? So how does that work? Doesn't a kid in Kesef require that the koine give the money? Well, how does this work? How does the Shiver Evakadai work? Zepman Fado, you see from this Kiddush HaTorah of Shichur HaVekanai and the Kesef that it's not so important that the Koine gives the money. As long as the money is given to the Makna on behalf of the Koine, that's also good. Now, without the parasha of HaVekanai, in a million years I wouldn't have known this. But Azay Nemra Halacha, that's the din of Haftar Lefdosa. So comes the Gemara Kiddush of Zion and says, this is not just a din prati by Shichur HaVekanai, this is a din called by Kesef, Kiddush Kesef. You can make a kinyan kesef to buy fields, to buy an isha, going to be yachim v'metalpe, whatever the Torah requires kinyan kesef, the koine need not provide the funds it can be provided by an outsider. That's the Chiddush HaTorah of everything. Zok Tiktzois, a Chiddush Godol, Zok Tiktzois, just as Evet Kenayri Kinyan Kesef can be pulled off by somebody else, guess what? So can a what? So can a what? A Kinyan Chalipin can be pulled off that way also. We read Megillas Rus and we thought of Vizois Israel, who has it? Yishlach Nolov and Asim Hareyu. It's got to be that the Koine gives the Kli to the Makna. That's what you thought? You're wrong. Just as an Ukhaz Kinyan Kesef, it's sufficient for an outsider to give on behalf of the Koine, and that's perfect. Okay, that's the Parsha of Evet Kenayri. The same is true when it comes to Kinyan Chalipin. Therefore, says the Ktzais, the giving of the Kli from the rabbi to the Chosan has nothing to do with what Parsha? Nothing to do with Shlichus. This is not Shlichus. What you're watching here is Hilchus Evet Kenayri taking place. Next time you go to a Chasana, next time you're sitting at the Chosan's dish, just realize you're not watching Shlichus and Zchi, you're watching Evet Kenayri. That's the Ktzais. Tzais went to a wedding, he saw Evet Kenayri take place in front of his very eyes. Abba Zoi says, Tzais, once you take this transaction out of the realm of Shlichus into the realm of Evet Kenayri, then what problem have you circumvented? You're no longer subject to what limitation? Ein Shlichus Yaakov. How do you know Ein Shlichus Yaakov? Who learned Kedushin in Sechem Perek? Elias, you learned with me 10 years ago, right? Atem Gam Atem, right? Right, the Rav Shuchem, Atem Rei Bris, Ashuchem Rei Bris. A goy can't be a shaliach. Good. When you're going down the realm, down the route of Hilchus Shlichus, you have a limitation in Shlichus Yachem. But once you tell me, this is Nishkin Shlichus, this is Kevakai Barsha, it's a different Barsha, it works with its own rules. Menon immediately that you can't do a Kinyan Kesef and Evet Kenayri, I beg goy. If you state such a thing, a goy will come, be a nice guy. Let's say Goy wants to get this Evet Kenayri free, so the Goy will put up the cash to get the Evet Kenayri free. Lama lo, says the Ktzais of Osna. So the Ktzais says, therefore, in this case, back to John, Reuben, Levi, Moshe, Yehuda, David, everyone here, Jews, Goyim, the whole picture over here, Rabbi Tam's trying to get, he's trying to sit and learn, doesn't bother, but he needs some cash, got to support his kollel. So he tells John to go to Germany on horseback, come back next month, hopefully you come back alive, and bring back the money from the Levi. And Rabbi Tam goes ahead, and he's mocked there to John, using a kiddi chalipin, part of the chayiv, in order for the ashrat to work. But the problem is, when he's mocked there to John, but Moshe and David, they're the ones who are providing the sudar. So how is that working? So the Sma yelled, it can't work, it's a shlichus. So the Tzoy says, what's my shlichus? It's not shlichus. That's Evet Kenayri, it works. It's perfectly okay, it works. So Rabbeinu Tam had no qualms with doing this procedure. What did Rabbeinu Tam not want you to do, though? You know, you're right. You know why? Because it looks really bad. It looks like you don't know how to learn. It looks like Rabbeinu Tam forgot that Ein Shlichus Yaakov. Not everybody's so small like the Tzoy. Some people make the mistake, says the Tzoy. Some people's great as the smart, they thought that this is based on Shlichus. So if you can write into the document that we made a Kinyan Chalipin on behalf of John, people are going to read this in the next Beis, and they're not sophisticated. The next Beis, they never read this, they never heard of this Ktzais. So they're going to think that this is Shlichus, and they're going to say, oh yeah, yeah, Moshe and David were Shlichim for John, that's no good. And they're going to take this whole Shtar Shah and do what with it, throw it into the garbage, and say the whole Shtar Shah is Batla Mevutal. It was based on a mistake. So the Ktzai said that order made a time says, just don't tell anyone what you did. What you did was okay. Just don't leave the fire scene because people are not going to understand it. But Tachlis is a good, it's 100% good what you did because it's not Shlichus, it's not Zechiah. It's Evet. What do you think in Lomdus about this Rebbeinu Tam, by the way? What's the Rebbeinu Tam? What was he Mechadish? He made a big Chiddush in Rebbeinu Tam. But a huge Chiddush. What was the huge Chiddush in Rebbeinu Tam? Well, what do you mean? What's about? What's bothering you? No, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the comparison to Evet Kenayri. What? Where do we find that this stunt of Evet Kenayri works? For what type of a Kenyan does this stunt work? By Kesef. So the Gemara had it by Kesef, and the Torah has it by Kesef Evet Kenayri. The Gemara extends it to Kedushin. The Gemara in Daf Zayin extends it to Kenyan Karka. And Rabbeinu Tam took it one step further to what? To Kenyan Chalipin. How do you know? Maybe by Kenyan Chalipin, the Kohen has to give the Chalipin. How do you know? Rabbeinu Tam made a big, big leap of faith from Kenyan Kesef to Kenyan Chalipin. What do you think that leap of faith entails? It's almost smacks of Chalipin being Mitam Kesef. Chalipin and Kesef are almost identical. They're cousins to one another. Very close to one another. Now, that doesn't bode well for who? Which Rishon is the last one you would expect to say that Chalipin and Kesef are identical? Rabbi Natan, three lines earlier, Rabbi Natan and Kedusha. Now, if you were writing a Sefer Yosha, you would be fine with this. But this Tosis is not writing a Sefer Yosha. They're writing a Tosis of Kedusha of Gimel. So the Tosis of Kedusha of Gimel, they just told you 2 minutes ago that Chalipin and Kesef are about as far away apart as one can imagine, and that's exactly why Chalipin ultimately doesn't work for Kedusha. And that's the Shach V'Tayr on Dav Gimel. This view of Rabbeinu Tam, and then to turn around and say, oh, by the way, no, it's fine, it's cool, no problem, that the Parsha of Kesef, the Chiddush HaTorah in Kesef of Eved Kedani, just rolls right into Chalipin without batting an eyelash. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so convinced that's true. I could see other Rishayim saying that without batting an eyelash. I'm not sure Tosfos would say that. So this Ketzos, a big Chiddush, this Ketzos. It's a big Chiddush, this Ketzos. But Beneinu, it fits into the Tosfos much better. You know, the Sma'at's Pshat made the Losha Tosfos very, very, very difficult. The Sma'at, conceptually, is Gevaldik, because the Sma'at would say, this is Shlichos, this is not Eved Kenayni. Who's an Eved Kenayni? Chos is not Eved, no one's Eved, everyone's Jewish, there's no one Kenayni here. This is Shlichos. Break Plato Shlichos. So the Sma held it's Plato Shlichos. Attack, it doesn't work with Goyim. And Tosfos meant to say attack, it doesn't work with Goyim. They didn't say it. That's what they meant to say. Conceptually, the Sma is Gevaldik, but textually, the Tosfos doesn't fit very well. At least not as well as we would want it to be. Whereas the Tosfos fits like almost like a charm, because Tosfos didn't attack the actual kid. They only attacked the writing because it doesn't look right. It looks a little bit funny. But in terms of conceptually, the Rabbeinu Tam was built on a tremendous, tremendous premise of that the same way that Eved Kenayni overcomes limitations of Kesef, it can just as easily overcome limitations of Chalipin, which leads us to believe that Kesef and Chalipin are related to another, which is not what we would have expected out of the words, out of the mouth of Rabbeinu Tam, as quoted in Tosfos and Kedusha. Again, two different ways of reading this Tosfos. Yeah.
What exactly are you writing? The other thing you wrote in the Shtar, why is that less of a Lashon of
No, we write that the Goy did it himself. That the Goy gave the Chalipin. That's okay. Even though we did it in his behalf. But emphasize we did it in his behalf. When you write we did it in his behalf, that smacks of Shlichus. Sounds to the unlearned man that it's Shlichus. So therefore you just write the Goy did it, which is good enough. Okay, guys, any last questions on the sugya? The Kesiyam and Chalipin. Three sugyas and Chalipin. A lot of Chalipin stuff. Okay, we'll move on to the next sugya. Bye.